The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
Stress, stress, and more stress. Everyone is stressed these days, but what is this doing to us? According to an article in the Huffington Post, an estimated 75 to 90% of all doctor visits are for stress-related issues. Stress is simply making us sick. As a matter of fact, the UN calls stress the 21st century health epidemic. So what do we do about it? Well, today I'm going to be talking to a guy who helps people deal with stress and do so very effectively. He uses some very unique out-of-the-box techniques that he has developed. He's Kyle Davies. He's a chartered psychologist, therapist, coach, consultant, speaker, and author. He is a creator of Energy Flow Coaching, which helps people overcome chronic health challenges, achieve optimum health and wellness, unleash latent potentials, and experience greater personal freedom, peace of mind, and happiness. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and a Master of Philosophy degree in applied psychology. He focuses on helping clients recover from depression and anxiety disorders. Kyle is about to publish his first book, The Emotional Body. Later this year, he has presented to a variety of audiences in the British Isles and abroad, and he is an international member of the American Psychological Association. He is a regular contributor to ITV Wales News and is frequently heard on radio and podcast. His website is kyledavies.net. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Bev. Thanks for having me on the show. And it's great that you've got this new show going. I'm really excited for you, and I'm really excited and grateful that you've got me on as a guest. So thanks very much.
Yeah, well, I'm just honored to have you here, and I appreciate you taking your time out to let me talk to you about some things today.
Well, let's hope we can provide some useful info for all your listeners out there.
Oh, yeah, I believe so. I have actually done some counseling sessions with you myself, and I'm here to testify your stuff really works. I still use some of it. I tell you, anyone that's had a chronically sick child needs some stress relief techniques, let me tell you. Oh, me. So, okay. Well, I tell you what, Kyle, to start off, just tell us a little bit about your work and what kind of people and problems you work with.
I work with a range of problems. As you said there, anxiety, depression are two of the things that I work with. I also work with people suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, adrenal fatigue. And because I guess stress is a funny sort of word, isn't it? But stress and emotion, I look at as being significant causes of those types of health problems.
Right.
Now, I know there are lots, there are loads of people out there that say, well, anxiety and depression, they're different. Aren't they mental health problems? And my view is not really. I think that we have this, we still to a certain extent, and I think probably it's something that's perpetuated with medicine, is we still have this idea of a mind and body split. And even though lots of people say, well, no, I believe that it's all one complex system, people often say to me, if I use the word emotion, or feelings, people say to me, oh yeah, but are you saying this is all in my mind? And it's a very, very old idea that, that mind and body split. And really, I think it's important for us to begin to see that we are one complex, thing. And stress is something that impacts all of us. It impacts the body, it impacts the brain, and as such is therefore something that can result in a whole host of from anxiety through to CFS and a whole range of problems.
Yeah, I think people, I totally agree with you, and I think people are waking up to that, and I totally agree. You cannot separate the mental problems from the physical, the body and the mind. It all works together, and as the good book says, the Bible says, we're body, soul, and spirit, and so you really just can't separate it, and I think people are waking up and realizing that stress is causing a lot of our physical ailments.
I think it's true. I think, you know, what we have with medicine, it's done some amazing things. It deals well with acute problems particularly well. So if we have an infection or if you've had an accident and you have a broken bone, medicine is brilliant. But the idea of when it comes to anything that's chronic, that's when it seems to experience, you know, medicine seems to have problems. And correct. More and more, you know, more and more people in both the US and the UK and around the world are experiencing problems that are chronic. And be that, as I say, be it cancer, be it heart disease, be it CFS, be it fibromyalgia, be it something that's autoimmune related. And I think that the issue, therefore, is that the cause is probably not something that's single. It's probably not one thing, because we are this complex sort of thing. This, you know, it's I think there are possibly a number of causes, but stress and emotion play a massive role, and they probably, for me, they're probably the biggest cause.
Yes, I tend to agree with you on that, and you have some very unique ways of approaching those problems, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. But we're coming up, we have just about one more minute and we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this, but because your approach is so is different than the typical person, and I will have to say I love people who think outside the box, because as you would say, inside the box thinking has really not gotten us too far. I mean, look where we're at. So I love to find people and talk with people that and work with people that think outside the box, and you do that really well, and I'm really impressed with your techniques and how you you know, your approach to coaching people and handling stress. So when we get back, though, I would like for you to tell us how you ended up doing what you're doing now. I mean, where did this, how did this start? And then we'll come back, when we come back, I'll ask you that. So
okay.
We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I'm back with Kyle Davies, and just about to ask him another question. And I want him to tell us a little bit about how he ended up doing what he's doing now, because, like I said, he has a very unique approach to this, and I'm really interested in myself in finding out how did he come up with this?
I was working, going back to, I suppose, the late 90s was when I started working in private practice. And I was working at that point with people suffering from anxiety, depression, and those sorts of things. And I'd done a kind of truckload of training in hypnosis, in NLP, CBT, in tapping therapies, in counseling, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then in the early 2000s, I started working with a medical doctor over here, and he had a particular interest in chronic fatigue syndrome, and or ME, as we call it over here, mainly because his girlfriend at the time was suffering from it, and he had done some of the same training that I'd done, and he began to use some of the theories and practices, and he had a process that was beginning to work with sufferers of chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. So I started to work with him, and at the time we thought this is fantastic. There, you know, going back 2001, 2002, 2003, there didn't really seem to be anything else out there that was kind of on offer, I suppose, because most people will initially obviously go to their doctor, and have some meds. They'll probably have sleeping tablets, painkillers, those sorts of things. They may be offered some counselling, but there was no approach for chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia that was necessarily working. So we thought, well, this is brilliant. We seem to have something that's working here. So that was the start of it. And as I say, it was going back to the very early roots of the notion of stress. It was stress was first kind of talked about by a guy called Dr. Hans Seely in something like 1936. And he came up with a theory that he called general adaptation syndrome. And essentially what he said was that what happens to us is that if we're faced with a stressor, our body goes into the fight or flight response, and then it begins to adapt. And it's once we've moved beyond the fight or flight, you know, ideally the external thing that's causing the stress goes away, and we are you know, we come out of fight or flight and we go back to normal functioning. But if the stressor remains, our body remains at this kind of adaptation phase. And the thing is that we can be in this kind of adaptation phase without being consciously aware of it. And that was kind of, I guess, his big thing, was that a human being or an animal can be in a state of stress without actually being aware that we are. But so if we remain in this adaptation phase for a period of time, it takes a great deal of energy, and the body is kind of working really hard, and it can only maintain that for a certain period of time before it begins to break down. So his ideas were that after a period of time, the body begins to break down, and then through the various systems of the body, people begin to experience symptoms. So we were taking that theory, I guess, and using it and building on it, and mainly, I think, because probably like most things, what we were finding was that the principles and practices that we were using with our clients was working, and we were trying to find out why. Because certainly when it comes to chronic fatigue syndrome, the view was that the cause was a virus, yet we were working with people's emotion and feeling and finding that they were getting well. It's like, well, that's a bit weird, isn't it? How is it that they are getting well? How is it they're making progress if it's caused by a virus? So then that's when we started to look at the kind of the stress theory. So that's I guess the background. You know, you were talking at the start about depression and anxiety and how I work with those. And one of the things I guess I've seen, one of the things I've noticed over the years is that when people become chronically ill, when they have something like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue or adrenal fatigue, it's almost always the case that they don't start all of a sudden with one of those health problems. It usually builds up. And this is something that I kind of call the hallway of health, if you will. And it's, you know, when I ask my clients to talk me through the kind of the history of the symptoms that they've experienced, you know, they'll initially talk about, if it's a sufferer of fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, they'll initially talk about those symptoms. But then if I invite them to really look back at other sorts of symptoms they've experienced, it's very often the case that they've experienced something milder, and the milder symptoms usually starts with something like anxiety, some depression, maybe some stomach or bowel problems. Problems, some insomnia, could be some skin issues, you know, some rashes or psoriasis, could be headaches, could be migraines, could be back pain, could be chest pain. And what often happens is that these symptoms begin to cluster. So it's almost as if the way our body tries to get our attention is it sends us emotions or feelings. And if we don't pick up on these, certainly looking at emotion, it's sort of a non-conscious process, so it can be triggered, affect our body, affect our brain, but it can be triggered outside of our conscious awareness. And when it's being triggered, and if we're not aware of it, and therefore it doesn't flow through us, so we don't act on it, what happens is after a while, there's something of a rewiring that takes place within the brain, and then the body starts to produce symptoms. And it's almost a little bit like hunger, really. And if you take your average person at a particular time of day, they're likely to feel some hunger, and it'll start with a mild rumbling sensation. And if they don't act on that, obviously that mild rumbling is just feedback inviting them to go and have something to eat. If they don't act on that, the symptom will subside for a while, but then it'll come back. And when it comes back a little bit stronger. Of course, if you don't eat for sort of 5 days, the symptom, in inverted commas, you get is not a mild rumbling sensation anymore. It's something more severe. And this was what we were experiencing when talking to our clients that were suffering from chronic health challenges, was they would have gone through this period where initially they would have experienced some milder symptoms, maybe some headaches, maybe some back pain, maybe some anxiety. And then there may be a period where they would have either taken some meds, or maybe they changed their diet, or they changed something, you know, to try to manage the symptoms, and the symptoms had subsided, and then they'd come back. And each time they came back, they came back with a greater amount of force, if you will. So that was a very interesting pattern. So that's a very long winded answer to your question of how did I start with this.
I think that's very interesting, and you're right. We're under so much stress, our bodies are adapting to it, and the stress state the body is seeing as normal, and it's not normal. And because we're in the higher cortisol and more of the fight or flight stress state, it is causing more. We're staying in that state. Too many people are. We're experiencing more health issues, and these issues I'm seeing, and I've talked to some other health people, they're seeing it too. These health issues are getting more serious, and it's taking longer to recover from these health issues. Are you seeing that?
I am, actually, which is a bit strange, really. I suppose if I think back kind of 10 years, I would say that people did get better a bit quicker. People still get better when they work with me now, but maybe it does take a fraction longer. I do think that, you know, I think one of the important things for me about stress is that it's such a commonly used word that for the most part people tend to think about it as a feeling experience. You know, it's that agitated experience you have. It was, I'm stressed at work today, and usually what they're referring to is a felt sense experience that they're having. And I think really, you know, what we kind of need to understand is that stress is, when your body is in the stress response, there's not, you know, you don't necessarily feel it. The other thing that I think is of particular interest is that there are a number of things that can trigger the stress response, and they trigger the same response. So you could have an accident, you could have a car accident, you know, you could have a bad case of flu or a virus, you could have some emotional upset, you could lose a job, you know, you could be exercising too much, you could be drinking too much alcohol. All of these things trigger the stress response in the pretty much exactly the same way. And I think for me, that's what is particularly important, is that we understand that. And that's, of course, part of that mind-body idea, that everything has this impact. And the way I look at it, and the way I talk about clients, is that we have this stress bucket, and we need to look at exactly what is in that stress bucket. You know, as you've already said, you know, the focus of my work is emotion and feeling, and the reason for that is because normally what happens is that, you know, if you've had an accident, or if you've had a bad virus, once you've moved past those things, you know, they've triggered the stress response in the body, they've been in the stress bucket, but once you got over them, they are usually a one-off event. I do recognize there are some viruses that can return, but often they're a one-off event. Whereas usually when it comes to our emotion, it's a sort of a drip feed. And, you know, I think this is the kind of the essence of my work, is that as you said, when we get into that space of the body is stressed, what happens is we acclimatized to that, really, and we don't realize that we are there. And this is the kind of idea that we often don't know when we are stressed. So there can be, you know, any number of things that are going on. And crucially as well, you know, my work essentially is about us being empowered and being responsible for ourselves. So that, you know, when I'm working with clients, it's from, I don't like the idea that, you know, this is a stressor or that's a stressor. I much prefer the idea of, it's the way I am interacting with whatever that may be, the way I'm interacting with my boss at work, the way I'm interacting with my wife. You know, these things are resulting in my body giving me feedback, and that is stress or feeling of some sort. And I think that's a kind of very crucial bit. But those are the things that we need to be working with, because, you know, I think at the end of the day, when it comes to the stress we are experiencing, it does come from the interaction that we have with life on a moment by moment basis. And, you know, usually the things we're doing are we're engaged in tasks, we're interacting with people, and these are the things that cause feelings for us, and our emotion and our feelings are all feedback. in much the same way as, you know, hunger is feedback. Or, you know, if you're walking down the street and a stone pops in your shoe and you have a sharp pain in your foot, it's that pain is feedback. And I think intuitively people kind of know that. Intuitively people know that everything they feel is feedback. But I think that we've got into this because of the biomedical model of health, where we've looked at this linear thing, infections cause disease, or some injury causes disease, therefore we've got to take some meds. I think we're stuck in that notion where we're looking in a very materialistic way of the body as being a machine, and therefore we need to be, you know, the machine has to be treated. Whereas really we need to recognize that, well, you can't remove the individual from the environment. The individual is a system. So we need to kind of understand these things. And this is why, you know, the kind of idea of emotion and stress is so important. And then making it simple by looking at, right, well, if my emotion is feedback for me and my emotion is triggered as a response to my interaction with my everyday environment, then there is something that I can do about it. The reason I kind of stress that point is it's a common kind of idea with stress that it's, oh, well, work causes stress, or if you move house, that causes stress, or if you get divorced, that causes stress. And whilst, you know, we can agree that there's a good chance that our body will produce emotion in response to these things, it's much more useful to look at, I think, to look at it from a perspective of, right, well, my emotion comes from inside of me, and it comes from inside of me, is a feedback mechanism, and it's giving me its opinion. My mind body system is giving me its opinion about my interaction with life. So because it's what I do, because my emotion therefore is about me, it means I can do something. If I think that the outside world is causing me to feel as I do, it disempowers me completely. There's nothing I can do. You know, if it's my boss at work is causing me to feel, you know, anger, and there's nothing I can do, there's a good chance I'll just stuff that anger down and think, well, there's nothing I can do about that. And then ultimately that can be a stressor, which goes in the stress bucket, which can ultimately, if I don't do anything about it over time, could lead to me experiencing some health challenge of some sort. So I think that's a, so you're going to ask a question, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That, no, go ahead. Finish your thought there.
I probably did. I was sort of waffling a little bit, wasn't I? I was just trying to emphasize that point. I'm trying to kind of tie these things into one. But it's interesting using words like emotion and stress, because obviously everybody has their own idea. And, you know, as I say, a big part of my work is this idea of we are much more, we can take control much more of ourselves than we think by, you know, and I use the word control very loosely, because arguably we can't control anything. But what we can be responsible for is the actions that we take in life. And if we allow ourselves to recognize that, right, well, my emotion is about me, it's a feedback mechanism for me. It's guiding me back to kind of being authentically me. It's inviting me to be authentically me, if that makes sense, within a given situation or context,
right.
And that's just a much more kind of useful way of looking at things, rather than, you know, we're a very kind of mental or thinking orientated culture, and we like to have kind of structure, don't we? So we kind of like to think, right, well, this causes stress and this causes stress, so I need a technique for this or a technique for that, whereas all of that is looking at what's going on outside. My work is much more based around the individual. You know, you as an individual have the capacity to transform your own life largely by allowing yourself to flow, and that's where the idea of energy flow coaching comes in. When you allow yourself to flow, your kind of own wisdom will come to the fore and guide you where you need to be, or your soul, if you're a spiritually orientated person. And I think this doesn't mean that we don't need kind of techniques and things like that, but it means that there's not, it's getting away from the disempowered view of this out here causes stress, and this therefore is probably what, you know, I need to have a warm bath with candles. You know, it's much more about, well, let's look at my interaction with my environment. Let's look at, you know, the lessons that I might need to learn from what's going on. Let's understand what my emotion is. Now, the critical thing, you know, I said earlier about emotion being a non-conscious process. The thing is, people may be, you know, may have listeners now thinking, well, okay, so if my emotion is non-conscious, maybe, and I don't feel it, how do I know? You know, how do I know what's going on? And there is a process of awareness that we need to have. But if you know, you're a sufferer of a health challenge, if you have anxiety, if you have depression, if you have some, you know, what medicine refers to as medically unexplained symptoms or syndromes, and that includes chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or adrenal fatigue, you know, if you have symptoms of one of those health challenges, then that's a clue. You know, when those symptoms arise, there's a clue that there is emotion that is blocked in the stress bucket, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, imagine this bucket inside, we've got all this stuff that goes in, and it could, you know, I've had a couple of fibromyalgia clients recently that the last thing that happened to them prior to having fibromyalgia was they had a car accident, and that was just, you know, so they said, well, a car accident caused my fibromyalgia. I said, well, what, you know, we need to expand our understanding and recognize that it's a combination lock almost of causes. There's no single cause, but it's a very simplified idea looking at a stress bucket. But if you look at it, there's, all right, well, you know, it's my stress bucket is probably almost full, and then that car accident was the final piece triggering the stress response in the body that then resulted in, you know, in these symptoms of fibromyalgia. But right. Then what then happens is when the body is in a sensitized state, or the brain is in that state, it working in, I guess it's probably a reasonably irregular or dysfunctional way, there's a rewiring that takes place. It impacts the immune system, the autonomic nervous system, and the endocrine system. What happens then is that small emotions trigger large symptoms. And you know, what can happen is that if you are missing emotion, then your body will let you know with a symptom. You know, going back to what I was saying earlier about hunger, if you don't eat for 5 days, you don't get that mild rumbling sensation anymore. You get something a bit more severe. And it's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but I think it's a useful way. And it's, I think a lot of the time when I've worked with people over the last kind of 15 years, they think that if they have very serious symptoms, that there must be, you know, something, there's got to be a massive cause, and, you know, it's going to take something enormous to change that symptom, to move beyond that symptom or set of symptoms. And it's very often the case that it doesn't require anything massive. It's very often the case that because there, you know, the body and brain has reached that sensitized point where the rewiring is taking place, and say it doesn't take very much at all. So I always think that's a reasonably encouraging thing for people that experience the sorts of conditions that I work with. You don't have to necessarily change your entire world. It could be that there is, you know, there'll be patterns around which you're kind of missing or unconsciously blocking emotions that probably could be quite small.
Right, right. And I think you make a good point. And I think you're getting more to the root cause of the physical issues. And you're saying that basically it's the emotions and the feelings that trigger the problems in the body with affecting the immune system and that kind of thing that eventually leads to sickness. And again, we're not, you know, trying to diagnose or treat here or anything, but it's interesting to look at sickness and health and our emotions and see the connection of how all of this, you know, works together. And, you know, usually it's never just one thing. And that's what I've learned. And I know other people realize that too. It's never just one thing that makes you sick. It's usually a combination of things. And I think it's interesting the way you, are approaching this. And basically, I think what you're saying is that you take your emotions and your feelings and you're retraining them to work to, look at the environment in a different way so that your body's not perceiving that as stress. Is that correct?
Well, essentially, I guess the thing that I'm saying is I think what happens is, and this is, and often it comes from childhood trauma with lots of people that I've worked with. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case, but it often is. And I think what happens is from a reasonably young age, and I think certainly within Western culture, we tend to teach our kids how to think. So they go through a schooling system and it's very left brain orientated. They're not really taught about emotion and feeling and this sort of stuff.
Right.
And I think that as a result of that, when as our kids grow up, they somehow learn, in order to cope with something in life that may be tricky, may be difficult, may be confusing or overwhelming, they end up almost unconsciously blocking the emotion that comes with that. You know, as we know, as human beings, we tend to learn things extremely quickly. So what results from that is that becomes a learned pattern, but it's a learned unconscious pattern. And so whenever that person is in that particular context or set of circumstances or that particular emotion is triggered, often they just don't feel it, or they're in that pattern of almost before they feel it, it gets blocked. So I said about emotion being non-conscious. There's an argument to say within some areas of neuroscience that emotion and feeling are kind of slightly different. So the systems involved in the brain are slightly different. Mm-hmm. So emotion is non-conscious, and then that triggers feeling. And obviously they happen almost at the same time, but that's kind of the idea. But what it means is that you can have emotion without necessarily having feeling. And I think that's part of the rewiring that takes place, is that a person can go through a period of time where, because they don't, they block, and usually unconsciously they block or push aside whatever the emotion is, the feeling bit gets kind of bypassed, and then they have symptoms instead. So essentially what I'm saying is, in terms of a process of, well, how do we rewire the brain back to as it should be? It's not trying to change emotion. It's actually getting back in touch with emotion.
Okay.
And allowing it to be. I guess this is coming to the crux of my work. Emotional discomfort is kind of an interesting thing, because what science tells us, as far as I'm aware, is that the same areas of the brain will light up when you have some uncomfortable emotion as when you have some physical pain. And what we know is generally, as humans, is we move towards pleasure and away from pain. So we tend to wince and resist and, you know, push aside, if we can, things that cause pain. So we tend to do that with our emotion as well. Most people want to get away from emotion as quickly as they can, and of course, right, this is the sort of idea. And of course, unfortunately, this is kind of what happens, I think, from kids all the way up through. What unfortunately what happens is that, say, when we get into a pattern of that, that's what I believe causes this rewiring in the brain. But ultimately, what we need to do is not necessarily change our emotion, but allow ourselves to firstly feel it, but recognize that it's about me. So, you know, an example could be, you know, if I'm at the office and I'm talking to my boss and my body sends me anger, the what we would call the emotion of anger, rather than me blaming my boss or saying my boss is causing me to feel angry, what I need to do is say, well, this emotion of anger is kind of comes from inside of me, and it's really guiding me back. It's inviting me to act authentically in this particular context. So if I'm to allow myself to be authentically me right now, what is it I want to do or say? And when we look at emotion in that way, if I can then act in an authentic way, which might be, it could be that my boss is overloading me with work, that, and he's doing it, he's being quite unfair about it. Maybe the stuff he should be doing himself, but he's a bit lazy, so he's trying to get me to do it for him. If my body sends anger and feels that I'm being unfairly treated, then I need to do something in a very constructive way, but I need to do or say something about that. Now, but of course, when I do that, the anger flows through me. And that's, you know, because all of our emotion is just an energy, and it's an energy that needs to flow. If I go for the outside in view, where I believe that my boss is causing me anger, there's a good chance I will kind of judge him. I'll see him as a horrible person. Well, how could he do this? Why is he doing this? I'll resist the fact that it's taking place. I don't want this to happen. I'll resist the fact that I'm feeling it. I don't want to feel this anger. And actually what happens is then that exacerbates any kind of rewiring that might take place. So I'm shoving down, I'm resisting the emotion, I'm shoving it down. So it's not about trying to change our emotion, it's actually just about trying to allow, accept, and accept our emotion and let it flow.
Right.
When our it's almost like our instinct is to resist emotion. And you know, as I often say to my clients, I think the mastery of life comes from when we can allow ourselves to tolerate a degree of emotional pain. Because when we do, you know, the thing I often invite my clients to do is believe that their emotion is never a problem and never needs to be solved. And when you can believe that, you know, you'll begin to see that as soon as your body presents you with an anger, a frustration, a fear, a boredom, that you'll resist it. You'll try to push it away. And the pushing away is part of that instinct of moving away from discomfort. But ultimately what it results is a blocking of that emotion. Whereas if in the short term we can allow ourselves to feel it, literally get in our body and feel what that emotion, you know, the physical sensation of that emotion, then have that sense of, right, well, you know, where is this emotion guiding me? If it's guiding me back to me to be authentic, what is it I need? What is it it's inviting me to do? Well, we can begin to act in that way. We feel that emotion. The emotion is actually far less. And that's one of the really interesting things, is a resistance of it. You know, we usually get in our head and resist by saying, I can't believe this is happening. Why is this happening? You know, all this kind of stuff. When we resist, then the discomfort is far bigger and tends to stay with us. So
what you resist persist, I believe.
Absolutely. You know, this is it.
So you're basically saying just just feel the feelings and let them flow through you, and that way it doesn't cause a blockage, and then further from that cause more problems. So you're saying just feel the feelings and let them go through, and that way we're not resisting it, so that we can get past those feelings quicker.
Absolutely. It's feel your feelings, be aware that and recognize that piece of knowledge, that my feelings are essentially are just kind of inviting me to be authentic. So as I say, so if I'm in the office with my boss and I feel an emotional discomfort that we're going to call anger, I need to recognize that that's my anger. It comes from inside of me. It's about me. It's my soul, if you will, inviting me to act authentically. And when I don't make it about my boss, I don't judge my boss. Then and therefore, without the, you know, if we, because when we get into judgment, there's another layer of emotional discomfort that kind of builds on top again. So I think it's letting emotion flow. That's the first thing. It's believing that my emotion is never a problem. I don't need to solve my emotion. What I need to do is act authentically. If there's some issue in life that I need to solve, then it's taking action out there. But it's not about solving the emotion. So as I say, if my boss is unfairly giving me far too much work to do, and I know that, and he kind of knows that, then I need to say that to him. So there's a problem out there in life that I need to solve, but I'm not trying to solve the emotion. I'm almost welcoming that emotion of anger, because it's prompting me. It's letting me know that I'm kind of being treated unfairly, if you will, in that context. Because if I didn't have that emotion, I wouldn't know I was being treated unfairly. And then, you know.
Yeah. So our emotions are telling us we need to take some action to handle some kind of a situation or problem that's addressing us.
Most of the time. Yeah. Most of the time, yeah. I would say there are occasionally times where there are things you can't really do. You know, if you're driving down the highway and you have somebody that kind of comes in and sort of cuts you up, and you have to hit your brakes hard, the chances are you'll feel a flash of emotional discomfort, some anger, some frustration rushing through your chest and your whole body probably, and. Right. You know, that person kind of drives off or they pull off or whatever. Now, in that kind of context, there's probably there is no kind of constructive action that you can necessarily take. But the key thing is to allow yourself just to feel whatever you feel, the physical sensations of what you feel. Stay out of your head, because the tendency is to get in the head and think and start thinking, how could that person drive like that? And as soon as you start doing that, it builds up. And that's where you get this amplification of emotion that comes from thinking. So for the most part, our emotion is coming from our interaction with our environment. When thinking gets involved, it just kind of blows it all up. So, you know, it's what we want to do is stay with the feeling, really, rather than try to alter thinking. That's a whole other point, I suppose.
Right. So the main thing is just feel the feeling and let it pass. And then if you need to take action, then you take action to deal with the issue. But in cases where you can't, you just feel the feeling and then let it pass, and then you can get on with it. But the main thing is don't resist. Don't resist the emotion or the feeling, but just feel it and let it pass. Okay, we're just about out of time. I want to take just a minute or so, and I want to hear a little bit about your new book coming up. Tell us just in about a minute. Yeah.
About a minute. Okay. So the new book, it has a focus on chronic fatigue and chronic pain problems. It's relevant for anxiety and depression as well. Essentially, it's this idea of stress and emotion. It's going into the kind of history of those things to a certain extent. But really what I'm doing in the book is laying out the way that I work with people. So to a large extent, I suppose it's self-help orientated. It's not the kind of book, I think, because these are complex things and the process of treatment it varies from person to person. So it's not necessarily the sort of thing where you can buy the book and get well if you're suffering from chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. But it's relevant, I think, to probably most people, because I think these principles about stress and emotion are. It's going to be laying out the way that I work, and it's going to be the kind of the key principles that underpin the work, as well as there'll be exercises and tools and whatnot in there as well.
Okay. Well, that sounds very interesting. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for this very vital and interesting information that you've shared with us. And I tell you, I look forward to reading your book. So be sure and let me know when it's published, and maybe I can have you back and we'll talk more about it and let people know where they can order it.
Okay, thanks, Beverly. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and thank you again, and thank you for listening. This is The Misdiagnosed Life. I'm Beverly Butler, and always remember, you don't know what you don't know.